The book of James has a lot to offer, but in particular, throughout its entirety, offers a sharp contrast between two types of wisdom. One that is earthly, unspiritual, self-serving, one that is from above, pure, peaceable, rooted in humility. Christians used to say a long time ago that there are two paths, two ways. There's the way of life and the way of death. In a way, James is presenting both options. The wisdom of the earth or the wisdom of God. He's challenging us to examine our motives behind our actions, whether they're driven by envy and ambition or a desire for peace and righteousness. As we listen to this passage, it is an invitation to reflect on the source of our own wisdom and how it impacts the relationships that we have. He's calling us to reject selfishness and to instead embrace the humility and submission that leads to peace. The word of the Lord from James chapter 3, verses 13 through chapter 4, verse 3, and then we'll tack on verses 7 and 8. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be arrogant and lie about the truth. This is not wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who can make peace. Those conflicts and disputes among you, where do they come from? Do they not come from your cravings that are at war within you? You want something and do not have it, so you commit murder. And you covet something and cannot obtain it, so you engage in disputes and conflicts. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly, in order to spend what you get on your pleasures. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and God will draw near to you. James begins this passage challenging his readers, both ancient and present, with the question, who is wise and understanding among you? And he then contrasts those two types of wisdom, one marked by humility and peace, and the other by selfish ambition and envy. James reveals that earthly wisdom is not neutral. It's driven by a destructive motive. It causes disorder. It leads to evil practices. This kind of wisdom is self-centered. It focuses on personal gain, on status, and power over others at the expense of others. The problem with earthly wisdom is that it thrives on competition, on jealousy, on pride. Those who follow it seek to elevate themselves, often tearing others down in the process. Instead of building up the community, it fractures relationships. It sows division. In this way, earthly wisdom promotes a world where people are constantly striving for more. More recognition, more influence, more likes, more subscriptions, more control, without any regard for the harm it can cause. This description of earthly wisdom, I think, resonates deeply with our own experience, whether it's our workplaces, our communities, our homes, even in our churches. We see the effects of selfish ambition and envy, don't we? It leads to conflict, tension, brokenness. It prevents peace and unity. And James's warning is clear. This wisdom is not from God, it is earthly, unspiritual, demonic. Left unchecked, it creates chaos. It destroys both the individual and the community. The pursuit of selfish ambition, and ultimately, it leaves us spiritually empty. You can have everything and yet have nothing. You can be totally connected to all of your subscribers and all of those who follow you and be absolutely disconnected from God and from one another. Society teaches us that success is defined by power, by influence and wealth, whether in the corporate world or on social media or personal relationships. That's true in all aspects, all places of your life. And it's a mindset that fuels a spirit of competition, where we strive to outdo one another, to one-up, to gain recognition or status, or just to make sure we're better than someone else, lest we end up the slow one in the herd that gets picked off. The mantra of looking out for number one has become a defining feature of contemporary life and ancient life, so much so that one day Jesus was walking around in a crowd and everybody wanted to see Jesus. All followers, all students, all disciples, all good followers of Christ. And yet in that moment, that crowd mentality takes over and they all push and shove and they'd want to get closer to each other. Poor Zacchaeus has to climb up a tree just to see something. And Jesus stops and he calls to the crowd and says, "I'm going to bring forth someone special from the crowd and give them my full attention." And so they all start elbowing to be in the front so that he can pick me, pick me. And he calls forth that poor little child in the back getting trampled by all the adults who are just elbowing to see Jesus. And he says, "You need to be more like this child." Because even with the best of intentions, those disciples of Christ, they start putting forth effort for themselves. On a different day, a poor man whose father had just died comes to Jesus and says, "I need to follow you." And Jesus says, "You do. You need to follow me. Come now. Just start today." And he says, "I have things to do first." Because even though he knew he wanted to follow Jesus, he just couldn't flip that switch to stop this looking out for number one. And we see this everywhere. In workplaces, climbing ladders often means stepping on and over colleagues. 'Tis the season in politics where leaders prioritize personal gain over the common good. And in personal relationships that are strained by evil and rivalry, social media amplifies all of this dynamic, creating a space where envy thrives as people compare themselves to curated images of others and their success and their wealth and beauty. And if that wasn't hard enough, now you have to compete with AI, where the machine knows what your life should look like and tells you what you should want. And we have this resulting culture of discontent, constantly driven by this need for more followers, more prestige, more power, more security, more comfort. If I just had more time, I could read my Bible more. This pursuit of self-interest, this earthly wisdom that James describes, it can only ever lead to division and more brokenness. That's the only more you're going to get from this. Rather than fostering peace, it generates conflict. Communities are fractured, families are torn apart, societies are divided by class, by race, by politics. Wars rage on in more nations than we can count. This obsession with self-promotion undermines the very fabric of unity and trust that a healthy community requires. So just as James warned, this selfish ambition creates disorder and strife, and it leaves people spiritually bankrupt and isolated. This earthly wisdom, though seductive, leaves us unfulfilled, distant from God's call to love and serve others. In contrast to that destructive nature of earthly wisdom, James then presents this vision of heavenly wisdom that transforms both individuals and communities. In 3:17 and 18, this wisdom is described as pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, When was the last time you pulled up to a four-way stop sign with three other cars and found anybody willing to yield? When? This wisdom is full of mercy, good fruit, impartial, sincere. It leads to peace and righteousness. It brings healing where all that earthly wisdom sows division. This kind of wisdom doesn't focus on self, but on others. And it's rooted in a humility and a submission to God's will. All these things sound great until we remember that our culture says these are signs of weakness. Heavenly wisdom seeks harmony and understanding. Our culture makes profit off of disunity and conflict. It sells. Heavenly wisdom doesn't drive people apart. Instead, builds up relationships. It creates unity where there was once strife. It's a wisdom that values patience, compassion, and kindness over competition and self-promotion. Rather than being motivated by a personal ambition, it seeks the flourishing of all. Or as James says, a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Peace is not a byproduct. It is the absolute goal of godly wisdom. In chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, James addresses the conflicts that arise from selfish desires. He calls believers to examine these root causes of their disputes, often driven by a desire for things, things that are just not satisfying. Instead of pursuing worldly desires, James urges us to submit to God. By drawing near to God, we are empowered to resist those forces that promote conflict, our own pride, our own selfishness, and to receive a peace that comes from a life aligned with God's wisdom, where God tells us what we should want in our life, not some influencer on YouTube, where God tells us what we need, not someone on a debate stage. This heavenly wisdom calls us to a humility and a peace and a righteousness that begins by admitting we don't know what's best for us. You might have grown up and moved out of your parents' house and pay your own bills, but you still don't know what's best for you. And I know that that grates on that pride, that ego, but this is what James says. He's inviting us to reject the divisive ways of earthly wisdom and instead to pursue a life of humility and peace, grounded in God's truth, not yours or anyone else's. And to do that, we have to first submit to God, to allow God's wisdom to guide our actions, to guide our relationships, our decisions. So James 4, 7 and 8 instructs that we are to submit to God and to draw near to God. For only by aligning ourselves with God's will can we resist the destructive influences of, well, ourselves. This submission to God manifests in how we interact with each other, called to embody the characteristics of heavenly wisdom, that gentleness, that mercy, that willingness to yield. Rather than seeking to dominate conversations, we listen. You can, I don't know if you know this is an option or not, you can listen to somebody else tell a story without having to preload a story of your own that relates to their story. Did you know that? That's an option. You can listen to somebody else tell a story about going to a football game without having to tell them about a time that you went to a football game. You could actually just ask them a question about the time they went to that football game. You could listen to somebody tell a story for the purpose of listening rather than trying to tell them about the time that you did something that was just slightly better or more interesting or cooler or related or somehow in a way that just tries to put that spotlight back on yourself. And rather than pursuing our own interests, we could seek the common good. Did you know it's actually sometimes better for you not to get the promotion you want because somebody else actually does deserve it more than you and could do a better job at it? And if they do the better job, that's actually better for the whole organization. And every bit of that seems wrong, doesn't it? But this is a humility that fosters peace and unity, transforming environments where division once reigned into a place where we uplift one another. In our broader culture, this embracing of godly wisdom means living counter to those society's values of competition and self-interest. It means treating others with dignity, impartiality, regardless of their status or influence. We're called to be peacemakers, sowing seeds of righteousness in a world that just desperately needs it. Ultimately, this godly wisdom is not just a personal virtue. It's a communal necessity. As we embody this wisdom in our relationships and our communities, we reflect the character of Christ. We draw near to God, inviting others into his peace, into his righteousness. And as we prepare to come to the Lord's table, we are reminded of the ultimate expression of heavenly wisdom. Christ, who humbled himself, who did not seek power, who, though he had all power, gave it all up, giving his life for us. He didn't want more, he wanted to give more. He didn't want to collect more, he wanted to give people more. He didn't want to make sure that he squeezed the most out of life and lived it for the best 8 seconds he possibly could. He wanted to make sure that everyone else could have more life. Our world seeks power and self-interest. Our Lord seeks humility and selflessness. He demonstrates a different way, one of sacrifice, one of love, one of peace. As we reflect on that wisdom from above, we are invited to draw near to God, just as James encourages. At this table, we lay aside our own selfish ambitions. We receive the grace that unites us in Christ. Communion reminds us of God's mercy, the peace we are called to pursue, the humility of Christ and his sacrifice. It's a table of God's wisdom. So let us come with hearts open to God's wisdom, seeking unity with him and with one another. Let us draw near to God, and God will draw near to us. Let's stand and sing.